And now the opinion page. The clock is ticking for Congress to pass a 2011 budget. All sides swear they will not support another temporary measure. So if there's no deal, parts of the federal government shut down starting at midnight on Friday. The impasse over this year's budget has lasted so long, it's already time to start arguing about next year's spending. Tomorrow, the chairman of the House Budget Committee will reportedly propose $4 trillion in spending cuts over the next 10 years. The federal debt is so scary that some Democrats are willing to discuss changes to Medicare and Social Security. Some Republicans might agree to tax hikes. This week, a series of conversations on the long-term debt, what it means for the current budget, future spending, and the effects on future generations. Today we begin with Steve Bell, Senior Director of the Economic Policy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and he joins us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in.
Enjoy it. Thank you.
And let's put politics aside for a moment. Why is this important?
It's important because in about 20 years, we will spend all the money that we have taken in taxes on interest on the public debt, Medicare, Medicaid, and other entitlements, as we call it, like Social Security and other pensions. We will have no money left over, unless we borrow it, for defense and all the other things people expect from a government.
And we could argue a long time about how we got into this mess, but that's another show for another time. The issue is, what do we do about it?
Well, both parties are culpable. We've made promises that we can't keep. I know that when I was staff director of the Senate Budget Committee back in the 80s, we attempted to take on Social Security. We were largely blamed for the fact that Republicans lost the Senate in 1986 on that one issue. I think that's very instructive. What we can do about it is really very clear. There's only four things to do.
And they are?
You have to reform the health care programs that the federal government administers. We cannot keep the promises that we have made to future beneficiaries in Medicare and Medicaid. Number two, we have to flatten the tax code. And that sounds like jargon. What it means is get rid of all the loopholes, break down everything into two income tax brackets.
All the loopholes?
Yes,
that
sir.
That includes like the mortgage tax credit.
Yes, what we recommend is this. Essentially, anyone who had a $500,000 home and a 5% mortgage on it would still get the full mortgage deduction. The average house now is about, well, now it may be 200,000 in this country, but about 95% of Americans would not even notice that change. Another one is, of course, charitable contributions, and there we give a refundable tax credit up to a certain income level. But you've got to get rid of all the loopholes and all the special exemptions, because that's just like spending to encourage people to behave in one way as opposed to another.
Well, all right. And Social Security?
Well, there are two big things there. One, you know, the President's Commission, Senator Simpson and Erskine Bowles said, let's make the age of retirement 68. At 68, you get full retirement. We did not do that.
That would be for people who are still 35 now. In other
Correct.
Words, not people
phased
who come
in
to,
over
phased
about
in
20
over
years. Yeah. That is not what we recommended. We recommended some other technical changes, but the result is the same. Is that you would have people who would be getting a full Social Security benefit smaller 30 years from now, 20 years from now, than they would under current law. Actually, this is very strange. Social Security is so easy to solve because you've got enough time to solve it. You know, we don't run into real problems for another 10 years. Medicare, we've started running into the problem now.
And as you look at this, there's another side. That's the spending side. What about the revenue side? You know, as well as I do, there are people who say, wait a minute, if we just cancel all of the Bush tax cuts, not just for the wealthy, but all of the Bush tax cuts, that pretty much solves the problem all by itself.
Well, they're just arithmetically wrong, but I understand their sentiments. The fact of the matter is, we're going to have trillion-plus dollar deficits on average, for each of the next 10 years. Let's take a look at the Ryan plan that you mentioned earlier.
That's Paul Ryan, who's the chairman of the House Budget Committee.
Courageous man. He gets a lot of credit. There's some things we'd like him to do that he's apparently not going to do tomorrow. But nevertheless, let's take a look at revenues. People want revenues lower, at least in certain ideological circles. Less than 16% of GDP right now, one of the lowest levels since before World War II, is now devoted to revenues. So if you have the Bush tax cuts on top of this extremely low level of revenues now, you will indeed make the problem much worse. Now, there are people who say, well, if you don't cut keep those tax cuts down, the economy will get worse. We're not at all persuaded of that.
So, in other words, you're saying what we're paying in taxes now, our tax levels, both federally and locally, are lower than they have been at any point really since the end of the Second World War.
Well, actually, since before the Second World War. Yeah, when you start talking about something around 15% of gross domestic product as the federal tax level, you're talking about numbers that haven't been achieved in 50 or 60 years.
It's going to be hard to convince people they're actually paying historically low taxes.
It is very difficult to explain to anybody why they ought to pay taxes. Russell Long used to say, don't tax you, don't tax me, tax the fella around the tree. And that's always been the way we've done things. But we don't have enough money to pay for the very basic things government is supposed to provide the way we're going now.
So you have to raise revenues, otherwise increase taxes one way or another.
Right.
And you say then reform the tax code by closing all the loopholes.
If you close all the loopholes and you make only two tax brackets, what you end up doing is making the system slightly more progressive under our plan. But you also raise a tremendous amount of revenue and you also keep people from spending through these tax breaks an enormous amount of revenue. There are two sides of this tax question. Everybody focuses on tax increases or tax cuts. The focus ought to be on the literally trillions of dollars in the form of these loopholes and tax expenditures that are enjoyed every decade by Americans of every background and business.
Now, as we look at the budget fight that's coming up this week, and that's about the rest of this year, they're only talking about discretionary non-defense spending. In other words, they're not talking about Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, or the Defense Department. So they're talking about, as I understand it, some 12% of the federal budget. And they're trying to debate whether it's going to be, $33 billion in additional cuts, or some of the House Republicans want another $60 billion in additional cuts this year. That, Everett Dirksen used to say, a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon you're talking real money. In terms of reducing the federal debt, people say this is peanuts.
Well, it's triviality. What we're doing is wasting a huge amount of ink, a huge amount of cyberspace and radio spectrum on talking about something that will change the deficit projection this year from $1.6 trillion to $1.595 trillion. Now, it's very difficult to impress anyone with that kind of reduction. The big fight, and you alluded to it, is how do we get to the FY12 budget, the fiscal year 12 budget, and in about 5 or 6 weeks, how do we get the votes on the floor of the House and Senate to raise the federal debt limit from $14.3 trillion, where it is now, up to some other number? Now, if we add the $1.6 trillion anticipated deficit, you'd say, well, if we went to about $17 trillion, we'd be able to get through 1 year.
This used to be one thing that the Congress used to pass pretty bipartisan. Everybody said, look, we know we've got to do it, because if we don't do it, the federal government can't borrow any more money. What's called the good faith and credit of the federal government would be called into question. All those bonds that are held by China, all of a sudden they're not quite sure that they can actually cash them out. The whole system comes crashing down.
Well, there's no doubt about that. It's not a scare tactic. I have no reason to want people to be favorable to Wall Street or bond markets necessarily. But the fact of the matter is that most of our debt now is not held by Americans. And we have given to foreign nations and institutions a tremendous economic leverage over us. And one of the fears, as Admiral Mullen himself said last year, is this may be the greatest national defense challenge the country faces. That is, other countries having so much of our debt that they can actually influence our international policy.
Other people look at it different ways. It gives the Chinese a big stock in keeping that American market alive for their exports. Otherwise, they run into big economic problems. But you can look at it different ways. But the fact of the matter is, as you look at that debt ceiling vote, now you're getting into politics. You have more than ever people, both in the House of Representatives, where it matters some, and in the Senate, where it matters a lot, who say, no way over my dead body will I ever vote for a debt limit increase. In fact, I might prevent it, and any senator can prevent it.
Yes, in 1985, which seems like a long time ago to most people, to me it just seems like yesterday, I was staff director when we put together Graham Rudman Hollings. And it was the same kind of dilemma we face now. How do you get a debt increase passed through a Senate that doesn't want to do it without guarantees of cuts in spending? It took us 6 months and about three short-term extensions of the debt limit to finally get that done. My suspicion is that we'll go through a very similar process right now. So we're going to pass a debt increase. The question is, what will Republicans and Democrats require so they can go back home to their constituents and say, yeah, I voted for $17 trillion, but listen, this is what I got in return. And I think a lot of folks are fighting right now about what process that will entail.
We're talking with Steve Bell, now Senior Director of Economic Policy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. As he mentioned, former staff director at the Senate Budget Committee and longtime staffers for Senator Pete Domenici, Republican of New Mexico. Part of a series of conversations we're having this week about the debt and how to get rid of it or get it smaller anyway. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And as I mentioned, you've obviously been through a lot of these battles from the inside. Is the fight over ideology, or is it over numbers, or are the numbers ideology?
In this case, the numbers, quantity, have taken on an ideological component. There's no doubt about that. You know, $1.6 trillion is a number so large that most Americans will never, in any real world operation, ever encounter something that large. But $1.6 trillion is about 10% of our, a little over 10% of our gross domestic product right now. If we continue at that level, we are going to be unable, as I said earlier, to pay for the things we want.
Yeah.
But more important about the ideological point, you know, I think Mitch Daniels, who's a very good friend of mine, and he was with Senator Lugar when I was with Senator Domenici, said it best recently.
Now the Republican governor.
He's a Republican governor of Indiana, who said, look it, I don't want to be standing around as the shipwreck saying, see, you should have done it my way, you should have done it my way. There are two things wrong right now in Congress. One, so few new members really know what comprises the federal spending. They think it's 25% foreign aid and the rest of it's waste, fraud, and abuse.
No, the rest goes to National Public Radio.
Well, to NPR, yeah. Well, that's about, my estimate is that's about 200 tomahawks. So I don't mean to lessen your importance, but we kind of spent all the money we allegedly saved from you in about 45 minutes in Libya.
In Libya.
But, you know, if there was one thing I would want people to know that I wish you could imprint on their brains when they were born, it's a chart we have in page 14 of our big report, and that is a pie chart. We spend 21% on Medicare and Medicaid, 20% on Social Security, 20% on defense of all kinds of security operation, 17% on other mandatory pensions, veterans comp, agriculture support programs. We pay about 6% right now on the public debt. We are so lucky that interest rates are so low. Everything else we do is 16%. If you got rid of all of that, the deficit this coming year would be $1.2 trillion. So the ideology is nice. I'll never vote to change Social Security. I'll never vote to raise taxes. But what those people are doing is letting a moment go by where we have exceptionally low interest rates because of unnatural conditions in the world, and saying, I want to do it only my way. That's great, but I call that theology in a way. I really do. I call that more theology than ideology.
One other factor, the economy has been in the pits these last several years. If the recovery continues to gain pace, nice jobs report last week, and looks like things are getting better, more people will be working, more people will be paying taxes, all kinds of taxes. Can you grow your way out of it, or at least part of it?
You can't part of it. What you'd take to grow your way out of it over the next 10 years would be 6.6% real growth every year in GDP.
And that's Chinese levels of growth.
We have never done it in this country since before World War II. No decade have we ever done that. So you can't grow
a lot of economists would panic if you did that. They would say inflation.
Well, the inflation rates would be and interest rates would be interesting. That would be self-correcting. But you can't grow your way out of it. You really can't tax your way entirely out of it. And you really can't spend your way out of it. So what you cut your way out of it. What you have to do is a balanced program where everything this country does is on the table.
And is as you look at the various plans that are being offered, do you see anybody's plan approaching sensible?
Well, I do have to give Paul Ryan a lot of credit, and I have to give Simpson and Bowles a lot of credit.
They were the chairpersons of
the President's
Commission.
They took on some tough things and made some tough recommendations. Ryan, who actually has his election certificate and for whom this is not a theoretical question, getting reelected, you have to give him a tremendous amount of credit. There's some things that we would have liked him to do that he's not doing.
Raise taxes.
Raise revenues, cut spending more, not shy away from Social Security. But he still saves $4 to $5 trillion, and that's a big number over 10 years. I should add, because I'm Scott and therefore sort of dour in my views, that the accumulated deficits over that time period will be about $13 trillion. So he reduces it by about 30%, 30, 35%.
Steve Bell, Senior Director at the Bipartisan Policy Center here in Washington, D.C. Thanks very much for coming in today.
Thanks very much for having me. You're doing a great job on this.
We're going to get another view on what to do about the deficit tomorrow in a series that continues all this week. Also tomorrow, we'll talk about sex discrimination at work. Some say the long battle is over. We'll hear arguments on both sides of that question. Join us for that. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.